welcome back to the podcast. Got Kevin here from EDF Renewables. And something new, Kevin. Good to hear your voice again.
Good to see you again, Mark.
Yeah.
We're expanding on our technologies this time around.
Yeah, wind turbine, that type of energy, is brand new to me. I'm not all that familiar with it. So let's get the basic education on how wind works.
Yeah, so wind turbines basically take the energy from the wind and convert it into electricity. The higher we can go up in the sky, the stronger the winds are. So basically, just like solar or other renewable energy projects, we're taking renewable energy source, in this case, the wind, generating electricity from it through the wind turbine, through the rotating of the blades, and then that electricity gets connected to the grid where we can use it.
You're working on a new project right in Erie County, right?
That's right. We're working on a wind project in Erie County. So basically in a few different towns, the southern slice, the town of Eden, western portion of the town of Concord, northern portion of the town of Collins, and most of the town of North Collins. And those are the areas where the wind turbines would be located. And then they would be connecting to the transmission line that follows along the east side of the I-90.
Okay. So, you know, you picked me for these podcasts because I'm good at dumb questions. How spread out is a wind project as opposed to a solar project?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when we're looking at a solar project, it does use up a lot of land, but the solar panels can be very close together in a cluster. But when we're looking at a wind project, there's a wake effect of the wind as it goes through the turbines. So the size of turbine we're looking to install, there might be about a half a mile space between each separate turbine. So when we're doing a wind project, things are typically a lot more spread out than they would be with a solar project to generate the same amount of electricity.
That's really cool. And then I guess another dumb question from me, do they always have to be like on mountaintops? I mean, where we're talking about in Collins, there's kind of a, you know, at least, you know, compared to right up here in Niagara County where it's flat as can be, there's some, you know, higher peaks there.
Yeah, so we're trying to find areas with better winds, and typically you'll find that on the side of a lake or up at higher elevations. And the town of North Collins and the area around it, there are some high points, you know, some hilltops and such. So it is a very good area for wind energy.
And there's none there now?
There's a couple smaller wind turbines, but nothing, not on the commercial scale or utility scale that we're looking at.
Okay. And I was just curious if, because what we talked about before we started recording was the newer technology with these windmills is incredible, and you only need half. Is that right? Half as many to produce the same amount of energy.
That's right. About 10 years ago, each wind turbine maybe had an output of 1.5 megawatts. Today, we're looking at machines that have an output of 6 megawatts or more. So what that means is you need maybe a quarter the number of wind turbines to generate the same amount of capacity or the same amount of electricity, which also means they're slightly taller, the blades might be longer, but they're also more spread out.
Okay. So how does the landowner get involved in a project? Do you find them or do they find you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have a team that we're working with. Obviously, I'm with EDF Renewables. We're the developer, the project owner, and we're working with a company called JS Land. They specialize in landowner relations, in land acquisition. And so Pat has been in the area for a few weeks now talking to a number of different landowners, trying to see who might be interested in participating in this project. If there's landowners who have not been reached out to who would like to talk about this opportunity, they can get in touch with us, and Pat would be happy to stop by and answer any questions you may have.
Okay. And then as far as the amount of acreage required, if a landowner owns 100 acres, how much land do they need to give up?
Yeah, so typically at 100 acres, you will only be able to put one turbine. As I mentioned before,
Oh.
we need some fairly robust spaces between turbines because of the wake effect. There needs to be room for the wind to
Oh.
regain its strength before you can have another turbine.
You're talking about like the wash behind it, like almost like a jet.
So, because the wind turbine itself is taking some of the wind energy and converting it to electricity, it's actually slowing down the wind behind the turbine for a certain distance, and then that wind regains its strength again. And at that point, you can have another turbine, but it's typically about half a mile to a mile. So, if you had a 100-acre piece of land, and after looking at all the constraints and setbacks, there was room to put a wind turbine, it's not likely to have more than one turbine.
Okay.
And the turbine pad itself takes up about an acre of space. And the road leading up to the turbine might take an acre of space as well. So each turbine might displace a couple acres of land that may have been used for farming, but all the other land around the road and the turbine can remain in farming.
And you guys go in and develop that, like the road, like you're saying, set it all up, build the turbine. And kind of walk away when it's done, and it's just, it's just the turbine. Nothing else is left to, I mean, it's a pretty cool process, right? And it's quiet.
Yeah, so that's all that's left is the road and the turbine itself on the property. And we have to set back these turbines so that there's no more than 45 decibels sound that will be perceived at a neighboring home. So the permitting process and the permitting regulations kind of dictate how close a turbine can be from a house, from a road, and how much noise can be emitted from the turbine or perceived from a neighbor.
So this project's already in motion in Collins, right?
So this project is in motion. We are reaching out to landowners. We had a very good landowner meeting back in March where we met with over 100 landowners in the area to share the idea with them, let them know what it is we're doing, and we're continuing the conversation with many, many landowners to see who may be interested to join our project.
And let's go through your team that work, with the community, with you guys.
Yeah, so again, I'm the director of development for EDF Renewables. I'm managing this project from a development perspective. My colleague Jazin is helping me on the development team. And Haley Farrington is our community engagement manager. So together we're working on managing the project, different aspects. We also have TRC, who's a very reputable permitting company. They've done the permitting on many renewable energy projects, a lot of wind projects, because we do have to follow some state guidelines and regulations
Sure.
and federal guidelines and regulations and local guidelines and regulations. And TRC helps us understand what they are, do all the studies, and get through the permitting and find out where we can and cannot place these wind turbines.
Yes. And then these people that you mentioned are truly the face of this project. When, I mean, they're the ones that are the boots on the ground, including you. I know you come in there to visit. So let's talk about what's in it for us, the landowners. That's the most
Yeah,
important thing,
so
right? That's usually the most important thing. What's in it for me?
absolutely. We wouldn't be able to go forward on any of these projects unless we had some significant benefits for the community and the landowners. So basically, because these wind turbines are seen from a distance, we have to think about not only providing for the landowners who are hosting the turbines, but also with their neighbors. So people who are signing up these lease agreements will receive financial benefit for hosting turbines, for hosting roads, for hosting any of the collection lines or any of the project infrastructure. But also, people who sign agreements, we have what we call a participation fund. So we'll take a certain amount of the production revenues and divide it with all the landowners who signed with us, proportional to the number of acres that they signed with us. We'll also provide additional benefit for people who live in proximity to a wind turbine. And that's all explained in our lease agreement. So again, that's what Pat from JS Land is helping to share with the community, is the lease agreement and negotiating these agreements between us and the landowners.
Right. So I know that Haley and you guys get involved in the community. What's the, you know, what are you bringing into the community where these turbines end up?
So right now we're proposing a 200 megawatt project, providing $2 million per year for the local towns, counties, and school districts through a payment in lieu of taxes, and also a host community agreement that provides additional money directly to the towns hosting the project. And a project of this size might only have a handful or 10 full-time jobs, which means we're not building a lot of new homes, we're not putting a lot of kids into the schools. So that $2 million per year in new revenues for the town, county, school districts can really be used to help supplement existing services, help improve infrastructure, or even reduce the taxes. And that really is to be decided upon by the town, county, and school districts. We don't really have a say as to how they use that money.
Sure.
Also, there's, you know, we like to support workforce development. So we're offering scholarships to graduating students, and we've already offered those this year. We want to encourage the next wave of construction workers on these facilities, of engineers, of developers of these facilities. So we're providing scholarships to people who want to get into a trades program or renewable energy program. And there's also many, many jobs created during construction. Again, a project of this size, there could be 80 to 90 full-time prevailing wage jobs created. And a project of this size might take a year for construction. And while we have all those new workers on site in the area, there's a lot of opportunities for businesses, hospitality, local services sectors, restaurants, accommodation, material providers. You know, there's a lot of concrete, gravel, material like that required on a project like this.
Right. I mean, you know, that's all collateral benefits of the project is everything around us. I mean, if people got to eat, got to go to the restaurant, got to have breakfast, right? That's all stuff that people forget about. You know, I would certainly forget about while this thing's going on. I mean, people are coming into the community that aren't there and spending money.
Yeah, each person who comes to the community has to be fed, has to find a place to sleep. It is a benefit potentially for someone's business and livelihood.
Okay. So when are we looking to get this baby rolling?
Yeah, so right now we're continuing to reach out to a number of different landowners, trying to see what kind of interest there is in the area for the project. The next step, once we have the land necessary for the project, would be to come to the community, hold an open house, share information about the project, give an idea for where the turbines could be located, and get feedback from the community. And so then we can take all that and continue our permitting process. Permitting itself might take the better part of 2 or 3 years. The interconnection approval, which is the approval we need to tie our project onto the existing transmission grid, is a 2 or 3 year process. So really, we don't get to construction until 2027 at the earliest, and construction could take 1 or 2 years, which means we wouldn't start operations until 2028 or so. So it really is a long timeline, and it really allows us a lot of time for good, healthy conversation up front, and really hear the community and share information about the project to try to find a project that works best for us, our landowners, and our neighbors in the community.
So, I mean, right now you're in the very beginning. You're at least 6 years out.
Yeah, about 6 years out from actually starting to operate the facility.
Sure. And then where does that electricity wind up in a project like that? Does it stay in the local or does it go back out to the grid or both?
Yeah, so 200 megawatts, this electricity would go back to the grid, where we would be tying to transmission lines along the I-90 west of the project.
Okay.
And then some of it would be used locally, but some of it would also flow to the other major urban centers, whether it's Buffalo, whether it's toward Pennsylvania. The electricity will be used where it's required, and it'll be, relatively close within New York State.
How much does, and this is kind of off of the subject, but how much does weather have to do with the generation of the electricity? I mean, we had some crazy wind this past year, and I would guess that that's actually not a good thing because you need a consistent wind, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And sometimes it's surprising how windy it might be hundreds of feet into the air compared
Yes.
to at ground level.
You know how I
But
know that, Kevin? Because I look at the treetops when I want to
that's
take
right.
my boat out, because that's how I gauge. I'm sitting on a porch and you feel no wind at all. But if I look at the treetops and they're blowing around pretty hard, definitely Lake Erie is going to have waves.
Right. Yeah. And that's why it's really beneficial to be higher in the air and produce more electricity. And I think that really benefits the New York State ratepayers because the more wind we can harness, the lower the price of electricity, which is also a good thing. So on a day that it's not windy, there's no wind up there in the sky, we don't produce any electricity. There's a certain cut-in speed where we start to produce electricity at a few miles an hour. And then gradually, as the wind gets stronger and stronger, the production gets higher and higher until at some point we reach the maximum production of the wind turbine. At that point, we start to furl the blades so that they're less efficient to the wind. But what that does is allow us to maintain the maximum capacity of the turbine without going over. And then there's also a certain point where it's so windy that we have to shut the machine down. So there's typically a hydraulic braking system, and we'll turn the blades away from the wind or perpendicular to the wind so that basically they're not turning anymore. But that's, very infrequent. So it's interesting. We can make a good amount of
Interesting.
energy with a little bit of wind.
Yeah, you have full-time people on site, maybe four, I think was the number or whatever, regular employees. Is that how that's monitored on a local level? Like, is there a guy in the area that makes a decision, hey, we need to crank this thing back? It's too windy.
Yeah, that's a good question. The turbines are on an algorithm, so they operate automatically to maximize the amount of energy that's harnessed from the wind, but also with the safety mechanisms too. Those are all automatically
Oh, okay.
programmed into the machine based on the wind speed. So each machine has its own anemometer to measure the wind speed. And so with that, we have an operations and control center in San Diego that monitors in real time all of our operating facilities across North America. And if ever there was any issue, it could be addressed very quickly. We also have our local operations and maintenance team that are typically on the ground Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and can also be reached and available on a call out if necessary outside of normal business hours. So there's really a lot of oversight on these turbines, and they're always being monitored for safety and to make sure that we're harnessing the wind and the energy that we can be harnessing so we can get the most out of these machines.
So I know we got to wrap today's session up, but I met a guy, and you know me, I talk to everyone, and we got to talk, and turns out he's a mechanic for turbines,
Oh,
and
nice.
he was in town to go repair some actually down in this very neighborhood, I think Varysburg, down in that way, and just from the point of view of having kids, what a great business to get into. He shared with me what he gets paid. That is big money. I mean, they called him in from out of town. They put him up, to come in and do his job, whatever needed done. And yeah, I mean, what a great business that is to get into. for younger people, you know, this is another benefit. You're going to have work here for sure. These things need maintained. And 6 years out, we're talking about a kid that's in seventh grade.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I was meeting somebody the other day who have these distributed scale solar projects in their area, like four or five of them. And these are the ones that are on, you know, 15 acres of land. And I was talking to this young gentleman who grew up right across the road from one of them. And he's now hired to be the operator of these sites by the company. So can you believe it? You know, somebody who lived across the road from this farmland that's now full of solar panels, he has a job across the road because of them.
That is fantastic. See, that's the kind of thing that you win over the local community with. You know, you do these scholarships with the schools and everything else, but you're showing the younger people that there's a whole new business out there to get into and learn, and you can make a great living doing it. That'll wrap up part one. Check the website and visit us for part two.